This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
You better clutch your nuts, honey, because it's time for Squirrel Talk.
So I guess we're back. Oh, wait, should we start? I don't know.
It's not time yet. Wait, is it time? What time is it?
Are we starting? Is it? It's 2:57.
It's been a while since we've done this. I don't know.
I don't know. Like, how do we even start a show? I don't think I told you this, but like, I quit halfway through a season because I was so bored of Drag Race and I got so busy.
You also. I don't know if I told you this, but you also quit drag for like
a hot minute. So have you? You've done it before. I feel like somebody's listening to us.
Is it Vicky?
Probably Vicky. Definitely Vicky. She's our only listener.
Hillary.
Okay, I think it's time we let the audience in on the joke. Hi, everybody. It's me, Hillary Yass.
And it's me, Selena Vile. And welcome back to a brand new Squirrel Talk.
Brand new? What do you mean brand new? I don't like brand new, newfangled things.
Like it, but Hillary, we have to change things up. Things got so stale for us.
Yeah. I think what you're meaning is like Squirrel Talk. What we've been doing is talking about Drag Race all the time, right? It's just like we just review Drag Race.
And people love it. They eat it up. We won awards. We're doing great.
Yeah,
but it's hard to keep up with that.
I think we were trying to count how many like quote unquote seasons of Squirrel Talk we've done versus seasons of Drag Race that there have been. And I think we've probably, including Vicky's time and all that stuff, like done like 10, 12 seasons of Squirrel Talk.
At least we've covered regular seasons, all-stars, international seasons. It's a lot. It's been a lot.
And the thing is, like, it kind of just feels like, you know, when the bus comes in the morning and you're just like, you know, Roxy Andrews wouldn't understand this, but
oh my God, stop.
Sorry, but when the bus comes, I'm problematic already. See, I'm problematic. When the bus comes in the morning and then it comes again and you're like, it's just the same bus over and over again. Like we keep trying to review people with fashion sense and we don't have any. So like
who are we to review people's runway?
Exactly. Like the Drag Race runways at this point are so effortlessly incredible. I'm like, it's just lots of yes. Thank you. Amazing.
And as improvisers, we love a yes and. We love a yes and. But right now we're going to give ourselves a no but and say, what if we didn't review Drag Race? And what if we reviewed drag, period?
Yeah, drag itself.
Yeah. In all its forms, in all of its beauty, in all of its issues, in all of its ugliness.
Yeah, because like I think something that we don't necessarily talk about necessarily up front is like, are the drag issues, like the issues in drag? And I think I'm just kind of tired of the fact that we often do talk about drag issues in Squirrel Talk.
Yeah.
But the title of the episode ends up being like RuPaul's Drag Race episode 7, Shantae You Stay. And we talked about like misogyny or something.
Yeah.
Like
that. Yeah.
You know, it's
true.
Like, well, no, the good for me, the meat and the amazing thing about our podcast was like we talked about something important, not that we were like, oh yeah, Pearl looked great this episode. You know, like it's kind of
Know. We never just stuck to the script of Drag Race. We always brought in our own personal vendettas into the fold. I say, let's just cut out the drag race and let's just get to us, the meat and potatoes.
The meat and potatoes. Which one's the meat and which one's the potato?
I'm the meat. You're the potato.
I'm definitely the potato. As I said in an episode of a thing I created a long time ago as Dr. Ooze, Dr. Ooh. Ooze did Hillary's physical and was like, Hillary, you are a fat potato. And I agree.
Wait, you did Dr. Ooze for Hillary or for Boa?
For both. Dr. Ooze is one of my long-running gag characters. No one cares.
No, but why have I only seen, this is one of my issues with drag, why have I only seen Dr. Ooze through Boa's video?
Oh, exactly. Because Dr. Ooze has made more appearances than that. It's just, you know, no one watches my content. They watch Boa's content.
It's true. I do actively ignore your content.
No, you're probably one of the only people that watches it. There's always a comment from Selena Vile, and I'm like, thank you, Selena.
I love, honestly, if you have never watched, go to Hillary's YouTube, go to her Instagram reels, and watch her videos, because there's so much work that goes into them, and they are legitimately so fucking funny. They're so funny. You have such funny fucking videos, and I wish people, and they're original, it's all original content. And yeah. I wish more people understood that and cared about original content.
Yeah, so, original content's tough, but, you know, all I can do is try and be funny. And Selena has some incredible lip-syncing videos out there where you love to promote people, like your friend there, Shirley Gnome, or
yeah.
I don't know, you just love getting, I don't know, just working.
Well, I have a lot of really talented friends. I have a lot of friends who are, like, mega talented that I've met over my career over the last like 20 years. Like I met Shirley Gnome doing a film. We went to film school together when she was 18 and I was 21 back in Vancouver in like the early 2000s. And so she is the funniest comedy writer. I think I want more drag queens. Every time I perform them, I'm like, everyone's always like, drag queens should be performing this music. It is, first of all, excellent vocals, hilarious topics, hilarious lyrics. And it's all very sexual. It's all very in your face. It's so good and smartly done. So listen to Shirley Gnome. That's what I'm going to say right now. Listen to Shirley Gnome.
I agree. Shirley Gnome, any content by Shirley Gnome is like a drag queen wet dream. It's so good. It's so lip syncable and it's so funny.
She's like Wendy Ho without the black scent.
I mean, yeah. Or our friends Flo and Joan. We often do their duets. They're a lovely British sister duo. Hilarious comedy songs. Yes. They got really famous on that 2016 song. They were like,
was it 2016?
Yeah, it was. Their song was literally like 2016. Oh, the worst. And it was very, very funny.
Well, we have really been hating on years for that long, eh?
Yes.
Because yes. I remember an article in 2013 calling 2013 the year of the outrage. And ever 2013. Since then, that was 2013. And then, so it's been that long that we've been like blaming years for our lives.
Well, I think it really has to do with social media, don't you? I mean,
yes, 100%. It's all about social media. We never talked about it like this before.
No, it's so easy to get into that perpetual cycle of doom or dread or misinformation or whatever. Yeah. And
you know what I hate is when a celebrity dies and people are like, can 2022 just end already? And I'm like, you know that celebrity didn't die because of the year, right? Like, you know that celebrities always have been dying.
Have been dying.
Have been celebrities. Yeah.
It's like, why can't it be like, you know, 1995 when no celebrities died whatsoever? Like,
my favorite is when it's an old person like Florence Leachman or Betty White. And they're like, oh no, the year took her. And I'm like, she was 99, bud. Like
it was really sad though.
She was lucky to live as long as she did.
It was really sad when Betty passed away like a day before some big event that she was going to be at.
Yeah.
What she was the last Golden Girl too, eh? Oh my goodness.
She was, and she outlasted them by a long time, by like at least a decade.
Just all four of them are legends. And we're working on a Golden Girls show, hopefully. I hope it might be out. I don't know. We might be working on it at this point before the podcast gets out.
Yeah, depending on when you listen to this, we got some Golden Girls news. So keep watching our socials, because if you missed it, we'll do it again. So don't worry.
Oh, for sure. Like, it's one of our things. This is the, I think the year of outrage was 2013. What do you consider, like, 2023, 10 years later? Like, what is this year for you, Selena?
I think this is a year of not caring anymore. You know what I mean? Just, like, not putting any goals into place, just letting the year take me from beginning to end and, like, just going all along for the ride.
Right?
And not trying just to put pressure on myself to do anything specific.
Yeah, just letting it happen. I think for me, this year is really, like, coming back to things and realizing who I am again. And
you had a very, very epic 2022. I know that throughout it, you were like, nobody cares about my work. But then you look back on it, and you did so many amazing things.
I don't say no one cares about my work.
Don't you?
Well, sometimes, but that's just my emotions. Everyone's insecure at times. Come on.
Not me. I've never been insecure a day in my life.
No, but I've learned a lot from that too. And you are right. Like, 2022 was quite the year. A lot of stuff. And now I'm in a different place, and I'm trying to see where, you know, how I can still do what I want to do, but also stand on my own 2 feet again. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're blessed right now. You have a full-time job.
Yeah.
At Second City. So you're involved in comedy, programming comedy shows at Second City.
Yeah. Which was a really crazy event to happen, because not that I was not unused to it. I was kind of doing that before the pandemic, but since being in pandemic kind of put me in a new trajectory for 2.5 years of, like, I don't know, doing a thing, right, for everybody. And so, like, coming back to a full-time job was a very big adjustment. Yeah. And also having not unlimited amounts of time for my art
was a big adjustment. Is there's a big trade-off, because you have financial security, which art does not provide us, but then you also have less time to do the thing that you love so much, which is drag and comedy.
Yeah, but it's like the evolution.
One thing is that you are working in comedy, which is great, though.
I'm thinking of it like a Pokemon, you know, like, you can't stay a Squirtle forever. You have to evolve into a Blastoise eventually, you know?
Yeah.
And it might be
ugly. I don't get the reference, but
it's a Pokemon reference. It might be ugly, but, you know, it's still, I don't know. You got to learn to go with things sometimes. It's it's that kind of year.
Go with it. Just go with the flow. Because you know what? You make plans for yourself, it doesn't work out that way. But good things happen anyway. Good things come to you no matter what. So, I mean, like, look, like, I was not planning on getting an agent and filming a movie last year, and I did that.
Yeah. There's some big changes that have happened for you also, kind of like coming into the post-pandemic world.
I wasn't planning on hosting the biggest brunch in the village, and... and that fell on my lap. So, like, things just end up happening, and you just got to go with it. I love doing the brunch. It's so fun.
Yeah, it's a good gig, and it's fun, and it actually pays quite well, which is not typical of drag shows these days.
Yeah. But that's a good thing about, like, something I, like, since the pandemic, what I've done is I got myself a job in a restaurant, which I hadn't worked in for 7 years.
Yeah.
And so it was like, I need financial security. I don't have, not that the restaurant is secure, but I haven't been doing drag since the pandemic, because there was nowhere to perform once we came out of it. And so I got myself this restaurant job. And then now that drag is fully back, I'm selective and choosy about what I do, because I'm like, I'm only taking gigs that will pay me more than I make at the restaurant.
Right. Yes. So, I feel that way too, actually. It's like, and like I say, it's kind of like an evolution. I'm very picky about what I'm doing. I don't necessarily want to just do drag for the sake of doing drag. I'm letting things come to me, and I'm pushing out myself only so insofar as stuff I can maintain and is worth it. You know, it has to be worth it for me. Like, I'm so excited to do work with the B-Girls coming up.
Yes, I saw that. So that is a show happening at Yuck Yucks. When is that? It's in February, no?
Yeah, February. Which is kind of a cool thing to be asked to do.
Have you met the Big Girls before?
Well, I met them in the pandemic, and so they kind of got this opportunity to do something there, and so just kind of things have worked their way over time. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Or like Napanee Pride. I'm doing Napanee Pride in February as well, which is really weird.
Wait, why is it Pride in February?
I don't know. Pride is all over the place. But Napanee, I used to live in Napanee for like 10 years. And that's a little place outside Kingston. Yeah.
Didn't your sister go to school with her?
Kind of. She was her friend for a hot minute. It was weird. I met Avril. She was okay.
She was okay. Was she punk back then?
Or no, not at all. She was, anyway, that's another story, isn't it?
Give us the tea on Avril Lavigne. Is she still alive or is it Melissa?
I was the skater boy, honestly. So there you go.
That song was about you.
Oh, look what happened to the skater boy. I turned into a skater woman.
She did. That's so funny. You should go on tour with Avril.
I hope that rumor goes everywhere now and Avril finds out and then she's like, shut up. And
she sends you a cease and desist.
I think... yeah, there's so many interesting things that are popping up, but I'm really focusing on like doing things that are making me happy, rather than like trying to scramble.
And what's making you happy, Hillary? What is it for you right now?
Oh, like comedy. Like I want to do comedy. I want to put on a theater show, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yay. What do you mean by a theater show? What are you looking for?
Ooh, you know, like I just wanted, you know, like we do our show together. We want to do improv together in drag. We want to like redefine, you know, the normativeness for drag, which seems to be always this kind of lip syncing getting pushed on. And there's so much more to drag. Like, look at all the winners from Drag Race for crying out loud. Literally 50% of them are comedians. 50% of them, easily.
At how Bianca Del Rio can not do one single lip sync and still sell out an entire theater. Yes. Look at how Bob the Drag Queen is going to be opening for Madonna on her world tour. She's going with her to every stop.
Exactly.
Jinx Monsoon is on Broadway in Chicago right now.
Yeah, which is why I thought it's bizarre to discount like the power of comedy and drag.
Yeah.
You know, the dancing is important, of course, too, and we love it. We love it to go to the bar and watch the girls slay. But man, I mean, don't discount comedy. And comedy is hard. Comedy is very hard.
It is very hard, and I think a lot of people think it's easy. And I think a lot of people consider themselves comedians because they can be funny on a mic, like as a host, they can get laughs, but telling the same regurgitated jokes that every other drag queen before you has said before does not make you a comedian.
No.
It does not mean you can handle a 1-hour improv narrative show.
We've seen it, haven't we? My God, just over and over again.
Yeah.
So I guess that's kind of where we're at right now. But I guess we kind of want to talk about like this. What's the topic? Like the state of drag 2023.
Oh, right. Is that what we're supposed to talk about today? Is that the rule? Let's talk about the state of drag?
I think so. Because we're kind of making Squirrel Talk into a topic-based show. So
yes.
Maybe we should talk about like how we want to do it. I think...
I want to hear your... let's talk about our predictions for drag in 2023. Like what the scene is going to look like in 2023. Because I saw a lovely little trend at the very end of 2022... which was that people were coming out to drag shows that were outside of the village and were not lip sync shows. I did my cabaret. We've done our improv show, Work the Mic, which I do with Visa Decline, Honey Cruller, and Chance of Showers. That's been doing very well. The lip sync show is coming back at Comedy Bar, and that's already sold out. So, like, there's And there's newer queens now and newer kings and performers who want to be doing things outside of lip syncing and outside of Village marathon drag. I think people are tired of marathon drag. And I'm seeing a big push for people to start finding alternate venues. Ella Mayo is a young queen that I'm like really obsessed with right now because she has a really cool distinct lip sync style and she does songs that are not top 40, which I always really appreciate. But then she also puts on shows outside of the Village, shows that are themed, shows that have live singing, and like her shows are doing very well. So it's, I have optimism that we're starting to want something more than background drag performers.
I don't know. Let's see. I definitely see a change too. I think 2023.
Messy Margaret's doing great with the bingos with Margaret with Messy Productions.
Yeah, I definitely say in Toronto, 2023 is the year of drag bingos.
Yeah, they're everywhere.
I think we're going to be making a stronger weird foothold in the East End of Toronto as like this weird camp comedy zone of drag in Toronto, which is very exciting.
You and Margaret are moving very well into the East End, and so is Visa Decline because she's running Comedy Bar Danforth. And then we also have Weird Alice in the West End who's doing amazing things at the Paradise Theater programming alternative or like B movies and cult movies and doing it like and bringing in drag performers there. So like that's been a really fun thing to watch.
That said, I also see, I don't know, the center of Toronto. I think marathon drag is here to stay in the center of Toronto. And honest to God, that's kind of the reasons why I don't really care about Church Street anymore.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I can't exist there. They don't like me. They like me, but they don't like what I do. So it's like, but I'm also a little worried about the West End because I think the West End is becoming drag race-ified because so many of the queens from the West End have been on Drag Race lately. So like you've got Mosu, who used to do an amazing brunch. Now it's a Drag Race brunch practically. And, you know, I've got the Champagne, who, you know, was on Call Me Mother. And so like there's all of this West End is kind of becoming very, homogenous and not interesting. Like it used to be grungy and fun. And now it's just like, what is it anymore?
Yeah. I don't know if I necessarily agree because I think Mosu has always been that. She's always been that like glamour puss kind of girl.
Yeah.
And then as far as Champagne goes, I don't think Champagne will like, I think she's a West End girl through and through. Like, I don't think she'll necessarily change into a yassified drag queen, drag race style. Yeah. And she does book interesting people at her brunch.
But I also see a lot of movement of typical like center queens to the West End. And that worries me because they just bring their marathon style over there. Like there's venues that are popping up and then you just see the typical Church Street queens over there doing their fives and six and spelling H, and it's just like not that interesting to me anymore. But I don't know.
Yeah, I do want to see people push themselves outside of the box and do more. I'm very sad the Beaver's closed. That's a big hit for the West End. It's a big hit. And then also Cherry Cola's. I never hear about shows happening there. I don't even know if they still are, but
well, you know,
that
it's
used to
tricky,
be a nice little venue.
Because you know, 2023 is also the year of like, in my opinion, straight people inviting drag queens into their bars to do shows. It's
Which
happening
I don't mind.
A lot.
I don't have an issue with that.
But you can only do so much for a straight audience like that. You know, you have to offer them something relatively safe. You know what I mean? Like you can't do like weird shit. You have to do drag bingo. You have to do lip syncing, you have to do, you know, that kind of thing. Don't you think?
I don't necessarily. No, I don't. Like, I just did a gig on the weekend in a straight space, and I sung live. And people were very into it. Bombay was there as well, and she did lip sync, but she was booked there to lip sync.
Yeah. How much was Bombay paid versus you?
To be fair, she's the name that drew people in. So,
yeah.
But I don't know. Maybe I'll ask her tonight.
You're on another show, I think. Like our friend Honey Kruller, Tom Hearn, is putting on shows again, lip synced.
Yeah.
There's a huge name on that show.
Yeah,
I bet she's being paid a pretty penny.
Of course she is. Of course she is. But she's also the only drag queen on the show.
Oh, yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm doing the show, but I'm doing it out of drag, which I haven't performed out of drag in a very long time.
I know. How do you feel about that? Like, you've been pushed out of drag by Priyanka herself.
No, that's not true. I was given the option. I was told that I could do it as Selena. Because I have done it before with Selena, but I feel weird doing it as a drag queen while not being one of the booked lip sync assassins. I'm booked as an improviser.
Right.
So it is a different dynamic for me where I'm like, it kind of feels unfair that I'm one of the improvisers, but I'm in drag. Because the whole idea is improvisers putting on a lip sync and seeing how creative they can be with their lip syncs. I don't think it's fair, period, that I'm doing the show at all. I think next time I'm asked, I might say no, because it doesn't feel really right. But I feel like I don't feel very confident in my quick improvising. I love our show because it's narrative and we can take our time. And that's really where I sit well in comedy is like through character and through building. Building a scene and building a narrative, I really excel at that. But as far as like quick, rapid pace improv, I'm not as quick on my feet as I should be.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you just have fun, you know? Like, I think that's the fun thing. No, I think lip sync is a really interesting show. Like, it certainly doesn't change the fact that improvisers get paid shit compared to everybody else, but...
True. True. Although I think Tom goes out of his way to make sure people get paid. And this is a sellout show, so I think we should
be all
right.
He really does. Yeah. Like, I'm not trying to be overly critical at all. Like, I'm very appreciative of, like,
it's a proper criticism. Shows. I remember when the Skechersons was running at Comedy Bar, that was a weekly sketch show. Every single week they would write a brand new show. No one got paid. Not a dime. They got paid in drink tickets.
Yeah, Skechersons.
For a weekly written show that was an hour and a half long. Everybody had to memorize. Everybody had to write. And they had a different host every week. The host didn't get paid. Nobody got paid. Except for, I think, the band. I think the band got... There was a band and they got paid. Yeah. That was something I took issue with.
And it was considered a high honor to be the host because it was kind of like SNL. And out of the House of Licks, I believe you were asked to be a host and Vicky was asked to be a host. And I was shafted over and over again.
Were you never asked to be a host?
Of course not. I wasn't on Camp Wanakiki famous at that time.
That's true. Boo. You know, Visa's also hosted it.
Oh, God damn it. Visa did host it. Like, I've pitched out shit. This is the thing. I always get shafted.
You do. But I think there's a Hillary Renaissance coming. I think the past year you showed a lot of great work that a lot of people are really impressed with.
The Renaissance of Hillary Yass.
The Hillary Yass Renaissance is your time.
Well, I think I've showed a lot of, as they say on Wanakiki, campy can-do attitude.
Yeah.
You know, there's a certain virtue to sticking with it as well. And so stick with itness. That's a good term for 2023. Stick with it.
Is it not stick-to-itiveness? Is that what it's called?
I don't know. Is it stick-to-itiveness?
I think it's stick-to-itiveness.
Stick-to-itiveness? Is that like some sort of Ottawa thing? Stick-to-itiveness?
Literally, you can't graduate grade 8 in high school if you don't know how to use it in a sentence.
You have to spell stick-to-itiveness.
Stick-to-itiveness. That's right. STI.
STI. Done. STI.
Done.
Do you want to talk about some drag issues that some people are bringing up as the state of drag 2023?
Yeah, let's gloss over some topics we may be covering this season.
Yeah.
That people have brought up. Okay, why don't you go first? What is something that you have heard a lot in your quest to discover people's gripes with drag these days.
So, of course, I've just put a little question out on my Facebook, just kind of asking friends like what they think some issues are. And I think the first issue that is very important to talk about is Drag Race oversaturation.
Yeah, that's a thing. There's
or just drag
seasons, and it's endless.
It doesn't end. And one of the things I was talking about, I calculated, that's the word, was, did you know that there has been as many winners of a Drag Race franchise, some kind, any type, since Priyanka, as there had been before Priyanka? And Priyanka only won 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So there was like 20 winners up to Priyanka, and since Priyanka, there's been 20 winners.
True.
Like, we are getting almost a winner of Drag Race per month. How are we supposed to keep up with this? And how are drag queens affording this? Because the level of drag expected on that show is so high.
Yeah, it is. Now, I personally do not mind the oversaturation because we as individuals have the power to turn it off. We don't have to watch every single season. And especially the international seasons, those queens deserve their own market. They're not allowed to be on RuPaul's Drag Race. So they need their own market for it. We Canadians, we need our own market for it. The French ones, the Spanish, the Filipinos, like they all need their own Drag Race. And we're not obligated to watch any of them. It's nice to. I do it on my own time. Like I watched France late. I haven't watched Italy yet. I haven't watched Philippines yet. So like just do it. Yeah. I think you don't just let go of the idea that you have to know everything about Drag Race and just pick the ones you want to watch and watch those.
Yeah. But the thing that I've noticed, which is very interesting for me, was that I used to, in my spare time, just kind of like have fun and rewatch old episodes of Drag Race.
Yeah.
You know, I'd be like, oh, I have nothing to watch right now.
Who messaged you just now? Who was your message from?
Apple. It's friggin' Apple. It was nobody. It was just a computer. Computer's trying to get at me. I said something and I triggered something.
Gwyneth Paltrow's daughter, Apple Paltrow, is trying to reach you right now?
Yes, I'm famous. That's what happens.
Tell her I say hi.
Hi, Apple. How you doing, Apple? Oh, she says she's gooped. She's gooped and gagged.
Ooh, she's been watching Drag Race. Whichever all the guests.
Well, where else do you think Gwyneth got the term goop?
Oh, my God. It was stealing
from queer people in general.
That's right. That's always been her MO. I've always been on to her.
My candles have smelled like vaginas forever.
That's one of her candles, isn't it?
Do you remember? Yeah, it smells like a vagina. Yeah, it was very strange.
Did you ever see her when she went on Jimmy Fallon and he asked her? He was like, okay, what does this do? And literally she had no answer for anything. She didn't know what any of her products did.
Most of her products are pretty snake oil. Let's be honest.
Yes, they are.
You know, do you know any crystal gays? Are there a lot of crystal gays? Are you a crystal gay?
What you mean, like doing crystal meth?
Yeah. No, but I'm sure we know them too. No, I mean like people who carry around energy crystals, you know?
Oh, like, funny you should say that. I actually bought a couple in November and I walk around with them every day.
Oh, you're a crystal gay. Oh!
I'm turning into one, I guess, because I was going through a very heavy depression. That's when I canceled our show in November.
Yeah.
I was in a very dark place. And I did go into a crystal store to buy something for a friend of mine for her birthday who I knew she wanted something from there. So I got her something. And then as I was there, I was like, wait a minute, what does this do? So I ended up getting one for joy and one for, I forget what the other thing was. Not abundance. What was it? It was joy and serenity.
Money. Money?
No. No, because I'm not concerned about money right now.
Yeah.
But I was really concerned about my mental health and my depression. So I got Joy and Serenity to kind of like soothe my brain. And I walked around with it every day and it did make me feel better. I mean, did it? I don't know. But my brain, it's maybe it was a placebo effect, but there was an effect and it was helpful.
Yeah.
Are you a crystal? Are you not a crystal gay?
I'm not a crystal gay, but I have my own hot objects. I used to call them hot objects from theater school. We called them hot objects. You just put something that you have a memory, some sort of memory or something attachment to in your pocket. You just, so you have a little secret. You have your little secret. You're like, I have a ham sandwich in my pocket. No one knows.
Is that what your object was? What was it?
I can't tell.
It's a secret.
Okay, but where were we? We were talking about something. I can't remember anymore. What was I talking about? Some sort of like...
We were talking about crystals and what you had in your pocket.
Yeah, but before crystals in pocket, I was talking about like the state of the world or something.
You're talking about going back and watching previous episodes of Drag Race, and then you ended up asking me about crystals.
Oh, yeah. Going previous episodes of Drag Race, but you know, like that was the thing. Like going back and watching previous episodes of Drag Race used to be like fun. I'd like to like, oh, let's go watch the episode with Jinx Monsoon when she did that thing or she had that fight with Roxy or something.
Yeah.
But these days there's so much Drag Race. I don't rewatch anything at all. And it's kind of weirdly depressing. It's weird, you know?
Yeah. My problem with it is that we're moving so fast through it. We're forgetting the iconic moments we saw, so we don't have time to sit and appreciate them.
Yeah, what do you think of season 15 hacking down the format from like an hour and a half to 40 minutes? I actually love it.
Do you know what's really interesting is Peppermint posted, like, nobody cared when the season 9 premiere was only 41 minutes. Mm. And I was like, what are you talking about? And I went back and looked, and Drag Race used to be 40 minutes long.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't a problem.
No.
And like, there were 15 queens on this episode where it was cut down to 40 minutes.
Yeah.
And there were 15 queens that walked into season 15, or season 9, sorry.
Yeah.
So I think what the issue is not with the length of the episode, it's with the editing. I don't know how they got away with doing episodes back then that like were actually fulfilling to watch, whereas this last episode we saw was completely hacked. Like, we didn't get to know anybody's personality. There was like nobody there. Like, we didn't get to watch them in their challenges. We didn't get to watch them on the runway. It went by so fast. How did that happen?
I don't know. It's definitely a different style that they're doing. And maybe it's for the MTV generation. But I do appreciate them going to a quicker, faster pace. Because those episodes, I thought, were getting so long.
Like, Hillary asked from the future. I'm just going to cut myself off to tell you that we're going to take a break. Oh, I totally agree. They were getting so long. But apparently it was because of that show that was after. That wasn't that good. Anyways, we'll get back to it in a minute, squirrelies. Bye. Okay, we're back. Okay, well, Selena, we were talking about long episodes and stuff like that. Selena, why don't you tell us a little bit about why you think the episode should have been so long? Amazing segue, right?
But my argument for a long episode is that these queens paid $50,000 to be there. And they deserve their time.
I have 5,000 episodes of Drag Race to watch at this point. So as a watcher, I do not care, Samantha.
But keep in mind, you don't have to watch all of those episodes.
Well, but you can't say that to a true Drag Race fan. And all the true Drag Race fans have the minds of 12-year-olds because they are 12-year-olds. You know, so they will say, no, you have to watch everything.
That's a lot. I'm that way with Real Housewives. Whenever someone, like yesterday, someone said that they started watching Real Housewives of New York from season 6. And I was like, why would you not start from season 1? You have to get the full history. You have to get the full history.
Mm. Well, there you go. You spent most of the pandemic trying to catch up on all of the Real Housewives.
And I did it.
Are they real? Did you come to a conclusive answer? Are they real?
Let me tell you something. Those New York housewives, they're real.
They're
the
real.
New York ones are 100%, because New Yorkers are fucking wacky, right? Like,
you are doing science's work.
I am. I'll tell you something. Beverly Hills, not real.
Not real whatsoever.
Not real. Everything on that show is backstage manipulation.
Did you see the newest show that's coming out? The gay friends of WeHo or something like that.
Yeah, I did. I saw the preview for it. I will not be watching the episode. Will you?
No, I don't. I don't. I don't buy into the drag wives things. I'm just not into it.
I don't understand why they think people want that, especially with that cast. It looks so basic.
I mean, Countess Luann is fun. She's a great character. NeNe Leakes, you know.
Yes.
Like, the big characters are fun, but, you know, Selling Sunset is a great example. You know, like, there's... Ooh. I love Christine Quinn. Everyone else can go suck it, honest to God.
That is such an overproduced show. And I have heard from people being like, none of those people are actual real estate agents. Like, none mm-hmm. of them actually work at the Oppenheim Group.
Right? I mean, I just don't think it's possible. It's so bizarre. So bizarre.
And it's so funny, too, because you go on the Oppenheim Group website and you look at other selling agents. And yeah, those women are there. But yeah. There's like 50 other people who work there.
Uh-huh.
So what we're seeing on the show is not the complete, like, that's a cast. It's not the actual working environment.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very bizarre. It's a very weird show. Reality TV is not that real sometimes.
If you had to buy a house from one of those Selling Sunset women, who would you want to buy one from?
Christine Quinn. What, are you insane? Obviously.
Oh my God. I would not want her anywhere near my business dealings.
Well, but at least she'd be interesting. Chriselle can go to hell.
I mean, correct. Like, yes. Chriselle is nothing. Chriselle is nothing to me.
Like, most of those women are just like trash bags of fire. At least Christine Quinn dresses nicely. Jesus. Like, come on.
I would want to buy from Maya. I like Maya. She's like the most professional and the most like, she's funny and she's normal.
Well, that's what you're supposed to think, because that's called branding and marketing.
I mean, it's not a very good brand. No one pays attention to her.
She's the voice of reason in a house of nitwits.
And that's why I always like the voice of reason. Anyway, carry on.
Yes, so, as you're saying. Drag Race oversaturation.
That's why we're here.
Yeah. That's a thing. Okay, so I also really want to talk about our good drag friend, Eve 6000.
Yes.
Brought up an excellent point about... her not being talented whatsoever and yet being allowed to get on television. I think that needs to stop.
Your question was, what are your problems in drag these days? And she said not being talented, which, I mean, someone had to say it, and I'm glad it was her.
I love that Eve just, like, you know, she looks at herself in such a funny way. And she's such a funny girl. I don't think she necessarily came across great on TV. And that's the truth. Like,
I think she did. I think she came across awesome on TV. She was like the most memorable character on that show.
You're not wrong. That was the big reveal. She was the most rememberable person from that whole season.
Yes. She was. Although Isis is really sickening. Like, she did such a good job on that season. She deserved to win. But then seeing her on All Stars, I was like, oh, you're just like, you're everything. She's fucking everything. And she's from Ottawa. And trust me, I know Ottawa. No one there has any fashion sense. No one there has a sense of humor. It's so bizarre to me that she's at that level of drag.
In Ottawa.
She lives in Ottawa. It kills me.
Isis is a really interesting case. But I mean, that season, I don't know, it wasn't full of memorable people. I remember her and Pythia. But that's about it.
Yeah.
I hate to say it. Of course, Cynthia Kiss.
Who is our brand new label mate. She is joining us on... Are we allowed to announce it? I mean, it's probably going to air later, but...
I mean, probably.
Someone special will be joining us on the Sonart Network, so we will no longer be the only drag queen podcast on this network.
Yeah, which is why we're pivoting. Pivot! No, we were thinking about pivoting a long time ago. We can't wait for Cynthia and or whatever to do their Drag Race thing so that we don't have to.
Yeah. They were at the Canadian Podcast Awards. They presented an award.
Yes, they were fake Trixie and fake Katya. It was very funny.
Yes, you and I also presented an award, but we didn't show up in drag, but we did show up in bad wigs.
Yeah, we just showed up in bad wigs and that called it a day. Okay, what are some other issues? Budget.
Yes.
Yeah, budget. What?
Because drag is getting very expensive.
Has it always been expensive, do you think? Or do you think it's just because Drag Race
forces us into this delusion? It's less forgiving now. No, like getting really, really good stuff in drag has always been expensive. However,
it has been.
There's an expectation now that everybody has to look at that level all the time. Whereas before, looking a little bit more busted was acceptable.
Yeah.
Right? Like you didn't have to have the greatest wigs. You didn't have to have the greatest makeup. You didn't have to have the greatest outfits as long as you were a great entertainer. Whereas now, people are more concerned about the look because of Drag Race.
That's kind of what I'm thinking also, like with, you know, like the West End of Toronto, like it used to be okay to be busted out there. And now it just seems to be less okay to be busted out there.
True. No, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
It's so weird. And I mean, pageantry has always influenced that, you know, like Mistress on the current season of Drag Race is a great example of like a queen is so put together because of her pageant background.
Do you know she's 24 years old?
God, I don't even want to know.
Blows my mind that she's only 24.
But, like, so well put together. But, like, you know, does everybody need to be... What about freaking Head of Lettuce and
Coco Peru.
Coco and
Aquilina.
The one with the weird lips.
With the weird lips.
Oh, my God.
You could be talking about anybody. Sherry Vine?
She's a Provincetown queen. She's very funny.
Miss Conception.
Yeah, sure. Or like Miss Richfield. Or, you know, there's like this whole... They dress down for being fun and funny and frivolous. And there's a clown aspect to what they're doing. And... like you don't have to elevate everything necessarily. Right. There's a time for elevation. There's a time for excessive camp.
Yes. And that's what I'm trying to do with drag is not elevate anything.
Just go back, revert to anyway.
I will say, and I credit you for inspiring me to do this, but my new face involves not blocking my eyebrows. I will never block my eyebrows. Again, I have figured it out how to make myself look like I have drag eyebrows while also turning my brow into a crease, and most people do not clock it.
Oh no, they really don't. I mean, it's a quick fix when you don't have time just to color your brows in for the most part.
I find it doesn't necessarily cut down on time of doing. Yes, it does. It cuts down on time of doing makeup, but it especially cuts down time on taking it off. It's less painful having to remove all that glue. It's so much easier. It saved my life.
And that's the crazy thing. When you're doing drag on a daily, it gets to be a lot. Removal and application are time spent. And
none of that shit is good for your face. It is not good to put glue on your face. And we do it so often.
What do you mean? I have glue all over my face right now. What is another thing? We've got
Pay.
Oh, pay.
I mean, it ties into budget, but pay. The fact that these marathon girls are getting $100 to max $200. I mean, headliners may be making $200, maybe. But $100 to do 12 numbers in a three-hour show? Like, get fucked. Get fucked.
Is that enough? Like, or is it... How much should they be paid, do you think?
I can tell you that if I'm doing a private gig, I will be making at least $250 to $300 for 1 to 3 numbers.
Yeah, I think it's crazy, this expectation. And I think it's weirdly unique to places like Toronto. And I haven't found it too common. But like when I went down to the States to do some stuff, the expectation to do 55 numbers was not there. It was like, yeah, you just come and do like a couple.
Did you find the pay was still shit, though?
The pay was still shit, but it was, but I didn't have to do 55 numbers for shit pay. I just had to do like 2 or 3. Right. Like, whereas like in Toronto, it's like you have to do 55 numbers and have 75 looks and still get paid nothing. So it's weird. Yeah. It's this weird culture. Like no one. And the weird thing about drag in Toronto is that there's these clubs, specifically Cruising Tangos, where it's like you go in and you don't even watch the show unless you're some sort of, I don't know, a woman on your, you know, bridal shower.
Yeah, it's all background, baby.
Yeah, it's like background. Like, why are we doing it if it's just background?
All they have to do is give the people a break. Let them dance. Let them do something. Give them a break. Give the performers a break.
Well, and I think one of the reasons why in Toronto, camp and comedy gets so devalued is because everyone wants to go out and see the dancing queens and do their shablams, and they do their, they work their pussies off, and it's very damaging to them, frankly.
It is. And
the only time they let up on that stage is when they let the comedy queen on or the host. And then everyone leaves the room and goes to the bathroom because it's the only chance they have to piss or smoke
True.
Or make out with someone. You know what I mean? Like,
true.
It's just nuts. Like, it's so hard to capture the attention.
That's why I like a queen like Kennedy St. James, who's been doing it like a very long time. Mm-hmm. And she has the power to hold the microphone and not lip sync and just interact with the audience, talk to them, be a host. And she'll spend 75% of her show hosting and maybe 25% doing numbers. And that's the kind of drag performer I appreciate.
Or like Misconception. Or, there's some really great Toronto queens that have like learned to deal with it. But
yeah. What I like about Misconception is she puts on a production.
The show of shows.
Yeah. So like she has a set show that she sells around.
Yeah. And she works in PV.
And Puerto Vallarta. Yeah, yeah. So and Provincetown.
Leapfrogging off this one, we should talk about that one that you brought up, which I thought was so hilarious.
Is it the one from Jelly?
It takes so long to go from open stages to actually getting booked.
Yes.
And I'm like, well, I don't know what to say about that. It's like, well, I mean, you know,
here's the thing.
Expectation? And like, why is booked getting so important to people?
Yeah. Yeah. Because here's the thing. You're not a working drag performer yet. So you probably have another job. So this is probably your side thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like for now it's a hobby. Consider it a hobby until you can make it a career, and don't expect to make it a career right away. Like you have to pay your dues.
Like it took me forever to get booked, and also like I shouldn't expect to get booked, and I just created my own shit. I booked myself.
Exactly. If you're not getting booked, book your own stuff. And I love the people who realize that that's what they should be doing. I bring it back to Ella Mayo. She's been doing drag for not very long, and she's already producing shows, and she's already doing so well with that. But also, like, a lot of these new performers are coming out and expecting bookings, and they don't – not only are they not great performers necessarily, but they don't have any training. Like,
yeah,
a lot of really great performers – who do get like who jump up to get booked, they have something, right? Like Bangkok, who changed her name to Destiny Doll, actually. So she's Destiny now. Destiny.
Oh, did she? Okay.
Yeah. She did open stages for a few months and then has quickly gotten booked and is everywhere. And it's not just because she's a dancing queen, but it's because she has that thing. She has like a dynamic thing that people want to watch. She's funny. She's like,
yeah,
she's entertaining.
Michaela Walker-Louboutin or whatever.
Yeah. She's got the thing.
She just has that thing and it's just like so watchable.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing, like, you know, yeah, everyone's good and there's lots of good performers that are coming up. It's just like, what are you, you know, there's already people out there that might be like you. So like, you know, yeah, respect that, learn who they are, like go to them for tips, go to them for mentorship. Don't expect that you can just walk all over their job that they have spent years cultivating.
I know a queen who was upset.
I would love to push Baby Belle Dell down a flight of stairs, but it's just not, it's not appropriate. I love her. She's wonderful.
I'm surprised you haven't done it yet.
I've tried.
I know a queen who was so upset that Carlotta Carlisle was not following her back on Instagram.
Oh, come on.
And went up to her at a show and said, "Are you Charlotte?" And she went, "No, I'm Carlotta." And then she went, "Oh," and walked away. And I'm like, you can't be upset that you as a newer queen are not being followed by an older queen who doesn't even care about Instagram. She's not following everybody. Like, she doesn't have to. Nobody has to follow you. Like, get over that. But also, nobody has to book you. There are so many of us. This is a very oversaturated market. I've had to book myself on a lot of things. I still do. And pay your dues and also be a good performer and get training. Like, a lot of people just show up to an open stage and think that they're ready. But like, you and I have gone through so much theater training. We have performance backgrounds. I was a musical theater performer for a very long time. And I was a comedian for a very long time before I even stepped into drag. But a lot of these people are like, oh, I'm going to go from this day job to trying drag. And
even if you do have training, I mean, like, just because you have training doesn't guarantee you work. Like, this is showbiz and it's a pursuit and you just kind of have to keep running after what you want. You know, don't get discouraged. If you get discouraged, like, you're going to burn out. Like, girl, like, it's a long run.
What do you think is a reasonable amount of time for going from open stage to bookings?
Honest to God, skip open stage and make your own bookings. Like,
open stage is valuable. I think it's valuable for performance. I think people need experience.
Open stage is valuable if you make it valuable for yourself.
Exactly.
And you are doing yourself and you are honing yours and you are making it work for you. But if you are just trying to copy people, like, you're boring, you're tired. Like, I don't want to see it. Like, it's not interesting.
That is a very valid argument, but I do believe that also you'll find yourself through trying different things, right? Like, some people are getting out there and don't know who they are yet, right? So they are trying what other people did.
That's true.
And hopefully, eventually, you'll find your own thing. And that's when the bookings will come, right? Like, that's when people are going to start to take notice of you, is when you start becoming an individual in drag.
Yeah, or not. Maybe you'll never be successful. Like, I mean, I'm still not successful. No one likes me. Okay, another thing, lack of handicap accessibility. I mean, isn't that a problem citywide?
That is a universal thing. I'm going to say that's not at all a drag problem. That isn't everything. It's been a problem in comedy. Like, comedy bars venue is down the stairs.
Yeah.
It took Second City a long time to get a training center that did not have stairs. I think theaters in general are more accessible, like theaters.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, for sure. I can't think of a drag venue aside from Galad Day Bookshop and maybe Garage in the Village that don't have steps that you need to get through to get
Well, I think accessibility means all kinds of things too. You know, like, there's people with so-called hidden accessibility issues, for example, mental health issues,
100%,
or triggers or
heels. Wearing heels, I think. Yeah. It is because people have fibromyalgia. People have issues. I don't like.
Why are people always coming for people when they're not wearing heels and drag all the time? It's like, I don't need to walk into the, like for myself, I don't need to walk into the club in heels to prove anything to you.
Oh, I never
I'll put them on when I want to.
Exactly. Yes. But also, if you don't want to wear them on stage, don't wear them on stage. You can
sometimes
get out
with flats. We're not on Drag Race. We're not rocking the runway on Drag Race. Yes. We're at a bar.
Where we're not being paid a lot and we're not, our insurance is not covered. So if something happens to my body, who the fuck is going to pay for that? Because OHIP isn't, now that we're fucking privatizing healthcare.
Tell that to my knee.
I'm being tested for Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, which I don't think I have. But the reason for it is because I have a really terrible rheumatologist who doesn't listen to me. And when I went to see her, it took me years to get in to see her. And once I did, she was like, what do you think this could be? And I was like, well, I've heard of Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, but there's also, and then she just cut me off right there. I was like, great, let's get you tested for that. And I was like, but what about fibromyalgia? What about rheumatoid arthritis? Like, what about things that are less rare that I likely have? Mm-hmm. Instead of Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. And then it took me 2 years to get an appointment for Ehlers-Danlos. And now I just had my phone consultation and I have an in-person appointment in like April, I think. It hasn't been booked yet.
Yeah.
But anyway, I have an issue and it's undiagnosed and heels hurt my feet.
Yeah.
And like, using a zipper hurts my fingers. Like zipping up my outfit hurts my fingers. It's like a lot of people have issues that are unseen that people don't know about, that they don't complain about every day. So drag is very much that. Like when people complain about someone not wearing nails or not wearing whatever, like there's no, just leave.
Yeah. I feel like people
do drag the way they want to.
I feel people didn't understand the irony when Alaska wrote the song, if you're not wearing nails, you're not doing drag.
Yeah.
No, she doesn't mean it.
Yeah.
She's making fun of the fact. Like, she came from the Pittsburgh pits of drag. They didn't wear anything.
She also said everything must be leopard print. How many times have you actually seen her in leopard print?
Exactly. Come to Brazil. I mean, she makes fun of every trope, every silly little thing, you know, like, no, you can do drag without nails. It's fine. I mean, I can't have nails on when I'm playing ukulele or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah, you can't. I mean, maybe you could. I don't know. Some people do it.
No, I mean, what's a big one?
Misogyny.
Misogyny and drag, what does that mean to you?
Okay, it means a lot of different things. I think it's a really big umbrella. One of the main ones is saying that AFAB queens don't belong in drag.
Like drag clubs and in general, right?
Because
I think the bigger thing is like, that kind of makes the assumption that all drag is drag queen, you know? Like, I think misogyny is an issue in general in the world, you know, because of the patriarchal society.
Yes.
But like, what does misogyny mean? I guess definitely AFAB queens are just not welcome. Lesbians are not welcome in a lot of queer spaces for ages.
I think there's also a pay discrepancy between queens and kings.
Yeah.
And that definitely comes from misogyny as well. No, there's a lot of like saying that women don't belong in queer spaces.
Absolutely.
Like, why is this woman here?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, most of those women are queer.
Yeah.
People don't see women as queer beings, which is another issue on its own.
So there's another thing that because I do agree with all of this, and I think it's very valid. There's another tricky thing about the misogyny question that is kind of like in the TERF territory, which is dangerous because there's a whole kind of subculture, and I saw articles about this. I just looked it up quickly. People are still saying that drag is all about making fun of women. Therefore, it's it's practically blackface or something like that.
I would say it is specifically TERFs who say that. Like, if you actually believe that, you are a TERF. You don't understand that a lot of people who do drag are women, are trans women, are non-binary people who feel like women. Like, it's... And even if I'm, like, for myself, I would consider myself a cis man, although I haven't done any, like, exploration into my entire gender. But... I do drag to honor women because I love women, because I respect women, and I have always been drawn to, like, strong, powerful women, and that includes many musical sensations that I love to interpret musically. So, like, it's not making fun of women. Get the fuck over yourself.
I also think there's a lot of, like, to appreciate about the quote-unquote gender of clothing. Like, clothing doesn't really have gender. Why can I not, as whoever I am, you know, I identify kind of like somewhat non-binary sometimes. But, you know, generally he, they, I don't know. It's complicated, you know? So like, but like they kind of, why can I not wear whatever the fuck I want to wear? Like, that's a question, you know, like, is that misogynistic? I don't think so. I think that's kind of a turfy kind of thing to say.
Because also wearing women's clothing as a male presenting person out in public is still a dangerous thing for a lot of people in a lot of areas.
You know, it's misogynistic and whatever else, you know, it just the idea of male and female clothing at all.
Yeah.
You know, like, why? Like, and I mean, why do a drag queen say, well, you should have to put padding in here and there? Well, honest to God, like, I mean, a dress is often are fitted for boobs and hips. That's why.
True. Yeah.
Like, there are clothes that are different. But anyway, sorry.
I do think wearing pads is important for some people. There's some people who can get away without wearing it. And there's some people who need it. And for me, it's all about, like, the silhouette you're presenting.
Yes.
And a complete look. I'm not saying it's right for everybody, but I'm saying some people need it.
Sometimes it's good. Sometimes it's bad. Sometimes it's good to explore. Okay, so that's the thing. Misogyny as a term, I think, is a very tricky one. And I'd love to talk about it with people and get their opinions.
Yes. So that's what we're going to be doing. We're going to be bringing on guests this season to talk about these round table issues that are plaguing all of us in drag, that a lot of us don't talk about enough publicly. I think money is a really big thing that we should all be talking about way more publicly.
Oh, yeah. Money in what context? Like
money in terms of pay, how much we're getting paid, but also in terms of like saving. Because as artists, we need to be making our own savings account because we don't have pensions. Mm-hmm. We don't have like all those things that like insurance. We don't have anything that's like put in place to us by a corporation, right? That you would necessarily get if you were working for a bank, if you were working for an insurance company, you know what I mean? If you're working for a real estate agency.
You know what? I think that's actually a good thing. Like maybe we should talk about the business of drag.
Yes.
And like, essentially like, well, what does that mean? Like as a drag performer, generally you start as a contract worker, and what does that mean? Yeah. And like, what are your rights as far as the government of Ontario? I know a couple of years ago, the Queen Luna Dubois brought up a lot of this stuff with a certain club in town and, wrote this whole list of stuff. And it was very interesting to see the list because when you actually, nothing to shade Luna. I think that was amazing that she went out and did this. But like when you actually look at workers' rights in Ontario, she was going after things that workers in Ontario as a contract worker don't even get.
But should?
I mean, I guess we got to talk to Doug Ford about it. Like,
well, we can't talk to that guy about anything.
But like we have to acknowledge the realities of what being a contract worker means. And if we want to change it and make our situation better, we have to, you know, change that. You know what I mean?
Like
make that situation better.
But I do hear what you're saying about, well, workers who do have unions don't even get that. However, why not reach for it. You know what I mean? Like, why not ask for it? Why not demand mm-hmm. it? Because if we don't, then we'll never get it.
Yeah. Well, no, but that's what I'm saying. But like, yeah. we can't just assume that contract work will get that for you. It won't True. Unless we acknowledge what it is and ask for more in that yeah. way. You can't yeah. just be like, well, this, you know, because like,
and I think that's one problem is there's a lot, I think a big problem in our community is the elder drag performers, like the headliners yeah. who have been doing it a really long time, because they don't want to help anybody else coming up. They want to stick oh, for to sure. their own, they want to keep their gigs, they want to keep their money the way it is, and they don't want anybody else having a piece of the pie.
Yeah. And
it was very telling who did not acknowledge Luna's post, who did not sign it, who did not share it. And a lot of them were white, and a lot of them were doing it for a really long time.
Yeah.
But that's the thing is like, things will only get better for everybody if we all work together to make it better for everybody.
There's a territorialism. Yes. In drag, I would definitely say, you know, I mean, I'll make fun of my drag daughter Messy for a second, because, you know, I always do. but for example, like the Comedy Queens in Toronto, we're doing these drag bingos, it seems like, lately. And yeah. we've got a couple bingos running in the city mm-hmm. with Messy Productions. And then Visa is starting up her drag bingo at Comedy Bar Danforth.
True. Yeah.
And so Messy called me and was like, well, do you think that this is appropriate, or is she, you know?
Oh my God.
And I was like, we don't own drag bingo. Stop being so territorial. Yeah. It is what it is. You know, we gotta.
Nobody owns anything. That's the thing. None of these ideas are original. Drag bingo has been happening for centuries. Like, we don't need to be fighting over it. Like, we just pick your different spaces and let's do it. There was a queen, a newer baby queen, who I actually really respect, because she's trying to do things that are different in drag as well for herself. And mm-hmm. she DM'd me and said, just so you know, I'm going to be releasing a poster for a show and it's going to say improv on it. And I don't want you to think that I'm stepping on your toes or I'm coming for your gig. And I was like, honey, I don't own improv. Like, I'm yeah. not here to gatekeep comedy. I'm not doing that. No. Like, I want every show in town to build themselves as an improv show. You know what I mean? I want everyone to be trying to do different things like that. So,
and also the funny thing about something like that, you know, they're doing a quote unquote improv show, because I think it was happening at a so-called comedy venue somewhere. Is that, you know, the two of us, we do our improv show at Comedy Bar. We've been doing it for a while now.
Yeah.
We've been doing comedy improv for years.
Yeah.
We're not that concerned. We're just kind of like, well, I'm glad that you're starting your improv show, but like, we're far beyond what you're doing.
Yeah. Like, it's not going to be our show. Mind. Like, we're not threatened. And that's not like, to say that like, oh, go ahead and do your little improv show. It's not no, to say not that at all. I want you to do it. I want you to go ahead and do it.
But it's kind of like, you know, like, what if someone came up to like SNL and was like, is it okay if we do sketch comedy? It's like, right. Go ahead. Like I don't have time to care. Like,
yeah,
I'm very happy that they're doing it and I support them 100%. But like, at the same time, it's like, it's okay.
Yeah.
We're doing drag. Great. Amazing. And I am so happy that there are more and more people out there that are trying to do something different, like improv, like comedy. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, when Vicky was around, like, she was just so happy to have us when we started coming up not that long ago.
Yeah.
You know, it's so crazy.
I know. In the last 5 years, it's really, the scope has changed a lot.
Hugely.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's so many topics to talk about. Like, and I have so many interesting things planned.
We can't cover it all today.
No.
But we have a whole season.
And also, I want to reiterate, like, we're also not trying to save the world. We're just trying to talk about some stuff. And
yeah.
And, like, give space to interesting things that should be talked about. We're not trying to solve them. We're not trying to be saviors or something like that. We're just trying to talk about stuff.
Wait, but we haven't talked about this week's episode of Drag Race. So what did you think of it?
Well, this week's episode of Drag Race might be old by now, so let's not even talk about it.
All right. Sorry, everybody who tuned in for Drag Race content. It's over for you.
Well, I mean, it's not over for you. You can just go over to our sister podcast, I guess. Not really
Semi-qualified queens on the Sonar Network.
Because those two are going to talk about all the Drag Race, and they were on Drag Race. So,
so neither of them made it very far, so they're semi-qualified to talk about
exactly.
it. Exactly. all right, well, Hills, I think we got a good base for a great season.
I think that's it. I think we got it going. I hope you follow us with Squirrel Talk, and we're going to talk about more stuff. And, you know, if you have out there in the interwebs lands ideas to talk about that are related to drag, we would love to hear your ideas. So
yeah, let us know what topics you think we should be covering this season.
Yeah, we want to talk about things. We don't want to keep it too heavy or anything like that. We still want to keep it light and talk nice. But, you know, if there's any kind of triggering subjects that we're talking about, maybe we'll put a trigger warning at the beginning of the episode, that kind of stuff. But, you know, we want to just open things up and talk about drag issues.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, why not?
And we will. Now, please take a moment to go into the rating system of the iPod thing that you're listening to and rate us high and leave us a comment so we know that you're enjoying the show.
Yeah, please rate us high and subscribe. Hit the button that says, I want to listen to you every day and every morning.
That's whenever, what the button says.
Yeah. Whenever things come out. Because that's generally how things go.
And make sure you're following us on the Instagram at Squirrel Talk Pod? Podcast? What is it?
I don't know. Just you're the one who does that one. You should know.
I'm going to look it up right now. Oh my God. Podcast. Squirrel Talk Podcast. Mm-hmm. And Squirrel follow Talk me podcast. At Selena Vial and this person at Hillary Yaz.
Yeah, that is Squirrel Talk Podcast is the place, our meeting place. So if you have questions and comments and insecurities, definitely DM us there. That's probably the easiest place to get at us.
Yes.
We want to talk about things. There's a lot to talk about. Okay.
Yeah, let's talk.
Yeah.
All right. So well, it was nice talking to you, Hills.
It was nice talking to you, too. It's been like forever. We were trying to plan a brunch tomorrow and, well, it just fell apart. So it was nice to talk with you.
It was nice to try.
It's always nice to try.
Yeah.
Well, squirrels, try again. Happy 2023. Make it a good year. All that kind of crap. And
remember to just go with the flow.
Go with the flow.
Let the year take you.
All right. Until next time. Bye.
Goodbye now.